This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hello, everyone from around the world, and thanks for joining us on another episode of Baseball Outside the Box. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. We're excited today about today's show. Right now, we're also on Facebook Live. So while we're on Facebook Live, if you have any questions, just write them down in the bottom of the screen, and we'll do our best to get those questions to our guests. Don't forget, we're all over social media, Twitter at Baseball Out. Facebook we're on, as you're on right now with us. Go to our website, baseballoutsidethebox.com. Do us a favor. Try to get all our social media things out as best you can. We've got a lot of great instructional stuff out there for coaches, players, and parents all over the world. The more you get it out, the better. If you're a current listener, you've been listening to us for a while, thank you very much. You make the show. If you're a new listener, go to Baseball Outside the Box. If you love the show, do us a favor. Go to iTunes or Stitcher and give us a good rating so that way the show can really get out there. 5 stars would be awesome. Any input, let us know. We'd love to know your input to make the show better. You can email me at info@baseballoutsidethebox. Now, we are excited about today's show. Before we start, I also want to thank the Lineup Media Group for producing the show and our special producer, Brian Kroc, on the other side of the window. We are currently in Chicago right now doing the show, but we just got back from Europe. Well, you will hear a second segment of the podcast later on in another show, our experiences in Serbia, Bulgaria, and also Italy. There's a lot of great things we learned there. So let's get rolling with the show. Our special guest, he is a great friend. I'll tell you what, I learned so much from this guy when we were together, and I'll tell you a little bit about him. First of all, it's Ken Medlock. He is an actor and professional baseball coach. Kenny was, he was 10 years with in professional baseball, signed with the Dodgers. He's managed in the independent professional league with the Sioux Falls Canaries. He was a pitching coach with Madison, and he was also the pitching coach with the famous St. Paul Saints. Everybody knows who the Saints are. They sell out prior to the season. And he was also the pitching coach, and how I met him. And I'll tell you what, it was faith, because I really learned a lot from him. I met him in 1999 when we both were in the coaching staff for Team USA, the professional team that competed in 1999 in the Intercontinental Cup the year before the Olympics. Our good friend Cash Beecham, who hopefully will get on Facebook with us, he was also on that coaching staff. We had an awesome time. Now, Ken's a baseball coach, but also you're going to know him for a ton of roles, 40 or 50 roles in sitcoms and movies. The most famous might be Moneyball, where he played Grady Fusion. But beyond that, that was the last role that he had done. But he's also been in Extreme Prejudice with Nick Nolte. He's been with Eddie Murphy in 48 Hours. He was with Bruce Willis in Undisputed, Wesley Snipes. And get this, he was in also Bad News Bears with Billy Bob Thornton. So Ken has got a tremendous amount of experience. We're going to talk about all that. We're going to talk about Moneyball. We're going to talk about pitching. We're going to get into some great things. I think this is a great interview. You're going to miss it on Facebook if you're not on. If you get on Facebook, don't forget, send us a message. You have questions for Ken. So let me welcome a good friend, great guy, great teacher of the game, Ken Medlock. Kenny, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, Pete. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. You know, as we talked about, one of the things that's tough for me is you got an unbelievable background, not just in acting, but also in baseball. I have never seen anything like it. You know, so hopefully I did a little justice. I know I missed a lot of things when it came probably to the acting part. Hopefully I helped you out a little bit there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of it there. It's hard to cover that much time in a short period of time.
I'll tell you what, let's do this. First of all, I want to tell our audience, I want to tell them a little story, and I want, you know, you're going to break in here with the story, because I want to tell them when we met in 1999, I'll give them a little history. I was at Mickey Owen Baseball School, and I don't know if you remember this, but it was a highlight for me because we were together on 99. We were in Tucson in spring training. We only had 3 days to go, you know, compete or train with Team USA and then go on to Australia to compete. And while we were in a clubhouse, we were supposed to be going to BP, and somehow we got on a conversation about Charlie Sheen. And I said, well, Charlie, you know, was a student of ours when I was at Mickey Owen. He was actually in my cabin. I was his counselor for a couple of years. And to my surprise, you said, well, let me call him. Because, you know, and you could tell the story. You stood up for Charlie's wedding. You're a great friend of his. But what was great about that was that you got him on the phone. And when I talked to him, Charlie, you know, talked like he had known me for years. Obviously, he didn't know me that well. But he got a tremendous memory, and he remembered all the guys from Mickey Owen. I was just astounded. I remember trying to also see if he'd sign with the Schaumburg Flyers, the team I was coaching for independently. So we had a lot of fun then. And I don't know if you remember that time when we were in the clubhouse.
Oh, I do remember it very well, because when you mentioned Charlie, I had the pleasure of meeting and working with him, and he has got the baseball bug as bad as anyone I've ever seen. He absolutely loves the game and devoted to it, and his house looks like Cooperstown, but he follows it up with his passion for baseball. And I actually, when I was in Madison, the first year in the Northern League, our ownership and manager, Wayne Krenchicki, I told him about Charlie. He wanted to sign him and have him come up and actually pitch in a game. And Charlie was busy on a movie project, so he couldn't do it. But he would have gladly jumped at the opportunity to ride on a bus and do all the things that a lot of people complain about just to be in that baseball environment. Just a true lover of the game.
And remember, he also, if I remember correctly, you had mentioned to him, we're going to Australia. He was going the same time, and we were trying to get him, or you were trying to get him to come and take BP with us in the Olympic Stadium.
Yeah, he actually was there at the opening of Fox Studio over at in Sydney, Australia, right around the same time we were there. And so he had a commitment to be at that studio opening. So unfortunately, he could only be in one place at a time, and he was. He would rather have been with us taking batting practice, believe me.
Well, that would have been a lot of fun. And I remember him when he was 14. We had him from 14 to 16 at the camp. And I remember him, you know, he was also a very good athlete. I mean, he can definitely play.
No, he could play. I mean, you see a lot of people in the movie business that have a background in baseball or a passion for baseball. Charlie, when I first met him, he mentioned the Mickey Owen School, and I had no point of reference with you because I hadn't met you yet. But right. Later on, I said, you know, a good friend of mine, Pete Caliendo, worked at that Mickey Owen Baseball School. And I mean, this was something he would do from the time he was 12 years old. He would ask his dad every time there was an opportunity to go somewhere that had something to do with baseball. He was on it, you know.
You know, Kenny, I got to tell you, and memories come back. I still remember that when I was at Mickey Owen. What a class act family, you know, Martin Sheen and his family are. Because I remember he flew to St. Louis, drove 4 hours. This is Martin Sheen with Charlie to the baseball school. And when he got there on Sunday, we as counselors wouldn't come in until 2 o'clock because we had the weekend off. And he would leave to the counselor to understand, you know, the rules of the cabin and all that. I mean, this was a classy person that really cared about his kid.
Well, they've got a close-knit family. I've had the opportunity to be up at the house in Malibu, and I've met Martin. He actually came to Baltimore when we were shooting Major League Two, and
I know you've had, you know, you just mentioned Major League Two. You've been in so many movies, so many parts. Let's get in extra excited when I saw you were playing Grady Fusion, one of the scouts. Give our audience and the part you played in.
Well, it's funny because Bennett Miller, the director, about a year before Money was a go. And on the audition, what are you ruining the game? I said, the game has a heartbeat, and when we start to bring in you'd be thrilled to find people know who led in scoring in the NBA or yardage. And it's always been about stats. We even got stat sheets when I managed and coached about every player when we played them. It was up to date. So I said, the new generation of baseball, it's going to be interesting to see how it works out. I think there's room for technology, but don't forget the game has a heartbeat.
Sure. And, you know, what I love about you is the way you just came out shooting is you're straight shooters, and it doesn't matter who you're talking to. You're going to tell people what you think and what you believe. That is the truth. During that scene, you played Grady Fusion. Tell us about that scene. Grady Fusion, the type of person he was, and what you were supposed to represent there?
I actually have several friends that are scouts, and I like any kind of role that I do that requires some research. I like to know who that person is that I'm portraying so that I can accurately represent them. And I had an opportunity to speak with Grady, Barry Moss, who you know and is a close friend of mine.
Yep.
I spoke with him on the phone. I spoke with several other scouts that I knew. So I had a pretty good idea of Grady, and he was an old school baseball guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked the fact that people thought he was a little truculent, and that gave me more juice to take off from there. So that's basically how that whole association happened with him.
You know what?
And
I think
when I
go ahead. Sorry. No. Go.
So when I met Bennett, actually, he asked me if I knew where I could find scouts. And I said, well, I can get you Custer scouts. I mean, I know a lot of scouts, you know. So I brought in Artie Harris and John Cole and Phil Pote and some people that were pretty, you know, established legendary scouts and people that were solid baseball people. We went into a meeting. And I was there with Mr. DeLuca, one of the executive producers, Bennett Miller. And he asked me to read for the casting director, Francine Mazner. And when I went in to read for it, he just said, put the script down and read with me. And we just did kind of an ad lib. And he says, you knocked it out of the ballpark. Now, do you want to read the scene? It was like 12 pages of dialogue. And Artie, you want to come back Friday? I said, well, let's come back Friday. I came back, and then he asked me if I would be intimidated reading with Brad Pitt. And I said, I don't know. What's he hitting? You know? So
I knew you wouldn't.
And so, you know, I met with Brad. We had a reading. He had me do several things, and then I got a call, and they called me directly and said, you're Grady. We've been trying to cast this for 3 months, and a lot of, you know, very established good actors have come forward on this role, but we can't imagine anybody else but you doing it right now. So I'm thrilled about that, and we started shooting. And so we brought in several professional scouts along with professional actors.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I told Bennett, I said, you know, people are fascinated with baseball. They want to look through the peephole and see what's going on in the clubhouse and behind the scenes and what their personal life is. I mean, obviously they love what's going on in the field, but I know myself as a kid, I couldn't get enough baseball, and I wanted to know every personality trait with every player that I came across in watching games or on TV or whatever. And Moneyball was a unique project, because when you think of the numbers and how they're equating talent and the dollar sign of the muscle, there was a book written, and then of course the whole book that Brad Pitt bought that was written by James,
right?
He kind of said, okay, well, this is going to be interesting to see how we put the human factor in with the numbers. And I thought that Bennett Miller and Brad Pitt did a great job doing that. I run into people all the time that I'm happy they recognize me, number one, and they're complimentary about the movie. Several people said it's their favorite baseball movie, and it did flow like that.
Yeah, I agree, and I agree. I tell you what, what you mentioned earlier about behind the scenes, you know what was great about it? And it had so many good scenes. But the one scene I really enjoyed was the one where you and Barry Moss were there, all the scouts and you know, around the table, and you're discussing different prospects. And is there anything about that scene there? Like, did you guys have to shoot that 2-3 times, or was it one time, or were there issues when shooting that scene?
No, we came in, actually, and like I said, there was a mixture of some scouts and some professional actors. And basically... you know, Bennett asked me, I said, I've never been a scout. I was a player, and I was always on the field as either a coach or, you know, hitting coach, pitching coach, whatever. But I saw the result of meetings. When you're in an organization at spring training, a lot of people don't realize you go into spring training, you're trying to make a team. And there's so much competition. There's, you know, various, I couldn't believe how many people were in my first spring training with the Dodgers and how many good, talented players they had.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we started the meeting, I was the head of scouting.
Right.
And we were just doing business as usual. And Brad was kind of going along with it. And Oakland was one of these small market teams that had so much money to spend on players and was affected by free agency, by Giambi and Johnny Damon and Isringhausen being taken from them after the season. And they had a great season. I mean, they got to a playoff situation where they were one game away from eliminating the Yankees. And of course that didn't happen. And then they lost those three players. So it, baseball is a game that you got to let go of today, good, bad, or indifferent, because tomorrow's another game. That's what makes it so much like life. You know, we can't, if you're going to not accept the past, you sure can't move forward in the future. And that's basically business as usual until Brad went to Cleveland, and that's where he met Peter Brandt in the movie. It was Paul DePodesta in real life that right. Jonah Hill played. And Jonah, a comedian actor that was, you know, a little, it's funny, he was a little bit, you know, I'm playing a dramatic role here and I hope I can pull it off. And he pulled it off great.
Yeah. I thought I thought he was outstanding.
He was outstanding. And it's very difficult for a comedic actor to play a dramatic role because people get used to them and, you know, they come on the screen and they're ready to laugh.
Yeah.
And,
right.
He took that character and, was perfect in that character. And when Brad came back, he had a whole understanding of, well, this is what we have to do. And the baseball, don't forget now, this took place in 2000. So mm-hmm. we can fast forward to 2017 right now. We can see how just about every team in baseball has adapted this. But baseball does that. When the Oakland A's won consecutive world championships in 72, 3, and 4, that's when everyone got colored uniforms. Before
yeah.
that, it was white at home and gray on the road and black shoes and no white shoelaces. And this is a traditional game. And, you know, when a team wins, other teams try to copy their success.
Absolutely. And, you know, and you know, baseball seems to be a reactive sport sometimes, as you're saying. It reacts to certain situations. What I thought about the movie was one thing that was misinterpreted later on, and also the book, is that people thought you didn't need scouts. Well, that's far from the truth. Both teams nowadays are using scouts and statistics. You need both the human and the statistical aspect of it. What was your feeling, you know, after the movie and after the book, the reaction that people gave you about what the game, where the game, you know, was heading?
Well, I was explaining that the thing that I always remember about scouts, number one, in high school, if you thought a scout was even coming to your game, you were just you know, on top of the world. I mean, you would you were hustling everywhere you went. You wanted to impress that scout. And the thing with scouts, they're kind of the silent part of baseball that is so vital to the game, because that's where you're going to find a lot of the instincts. A scout will say, George Genovese, who I thought was a legendary scout, obviously, and someone that should be in the Hall of Fame if they ever decide to open it up to well-deserving scouts, because every player you see out there was found by a scout.
Yeah.
So George had a unique way of doing it. He would say, this guy reminds me of a player he wanted. This guy reminds me of, he throws like Tito Fuente. He's got a mannerism like one of the Alou brothers. And he would always say, I never took a jugs gun with me because I don't need that to know if a kid, I want to put it down and see if the pitcher has an idea how to pitch.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need a stopwatch to know if someone's fast. In other words, George would say, I don't need to call the weatherman to turn my windshield wipers on.
Yeah.
I want to see if a player has an instinct for the game and knows how to play. And of course, he signed a lot of people. George Foster, for instance, hit 125 at El Camino College. And I played on a Sunday club with George Foster here in L.A. And just really one of the nicest guys I met, very quiet and talented. And, you know, he was one of George's guys along with, you know, Gary Matthews, Gary Maddox. He went to see Gary Matthews and he struck out. And George closed his book, walked away, and Gary Matthews was a pitcher at San Fernando High School. Uh-huh. And George drafted him, but he did a lot of that, and it was based on instincts, not numbers. Because if you looked at George Foster's in the cybermetrics point of view, you'd never, you know, you'd close the book on him and say, this guy hit 125 in junior college. He's not going to be able to do anything.
Sure.
But because of the instincts of a scout, he threw all that out the window. And he realized that there's something in a player that a good scout can see. And that is going to always be a vital part of the game.
Absolutely. I don't think you'd ever get rid of scouts or the game would go in a bad direction. The other thing is, you know, Moneyball, you know, I got to believe it proved also that, you know, it's not, you know, obviously we're looking for athletes, but it's not just athletes. We're looking for guys that can play the game a little bit. And it seemed to prove that sometimes we stereotype certain players, as Brad Pitt mentioned in Moneyball, you know, where you stereotype certain guys that they have to be a certain size, certain weight, or they have to hit a certain thing. What's your philosophy on that end, especially when trying to put a team together?
Well, I think that without a doubt, baseball requires more athletic skills than any other sport. Jerry Rice is a Hall of Fame receiver, but if he can't catch the ball and throw it back to the quarterback, he can't be an outfielder.
Right.
You know, you've got to run the bases like a track and field guy on a curve. You've got to have hand-eye coordination like tennis and golf. So there, obviously you want to see good bodies. I remember when the Kansas City Royals first came into baseball, they had an academy.
Yep.
And there were certain criteria in that academy. You know, you had to be a certain size. You had to run the 60 in a certain time. And, you know, the 60-yard dash was something that Branch Rickey put in because that happens to be the distance between second and home. Now, I always wondered, why don't we just run people from second to home?
Yeah, right.
You know, because there's always a difference between track speed and football speed, for instance. You can take great track people and put them in the backfield, but if they don't know how to accelerate, decelerate, change directions, and follow their blockers, then they're not going to be successful at that sport. And because baseball is a sport that requires so much athletic ability, with the exception of a pitcher has to have a good arm and be able to throw, but a position player, their specificity in position players, just like on your lineup, where you'll have a leadoff guy and a guy behind him that might handle a bat well, then your 3, 4, 5, 6 guys, maybe power guys. You have the same type of philosophy with your defense. You have middle infielders, you have corner guys, you have outfielders, and that doesn't necessarily mean you have to have this huge body. You can look in the major leagues today and a guy like Judge and then Altuve, and you put them side to side, and it looks like, you know, a guy's walking his kid to kindergarten, but they can both flat play.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's a lot of big guys that can't play, and there's a lot of little guys that can play.
Absolutely.
So it used to be a philosophy with a lot of people, they wouldn't go out and sign a pitcher unless he was over a certain height, or stereotype that you're too small to be a pitcher, unless you're left-handed, you know. And so a lot of those you know, old attitudes are being disproven by guys that come out and disprove it.
Yeah, and Moneyball kind of helped get that start going. Hey, by the way, we've got a record number of people on Facebook. Ken Medlock on the show, Baseball Outside the Box. Ken, by the way, John Kuhn, you remember John Kuhn, he mentions here, you were the pitching coach in Madison, Black Wolf, 1996 to 97. What a great guy, great pitching coach. Yeah, he says hi live on Facebook. Thanks for joining us, John. Hey, Ken, listen, you and I spent time. I got to, you know, it was a pleasure. 2 weeks, you know, in Australia competing, you know, listening to you talk to the pitchers and working with the pitchers in a short period of time. We also spent some time in Japan. And there's no, you know, and I've been around a lot in 38 years, a lot of good coaches. And I just feel that you've got a great insight in not just the pitching aspect, but the game itself. Let's do this. give us an idea where you think the game is heading, whether it be at the youth level or whether it be at the professional level, because especially at the youth, because that's the area that, if depending how it's going, it could go in the wrong direction. What's your pulse on youth baseball nowadays?
I've always thought that youth baseball was the seed that grew the big league tree.
Mm-hmm.
When you have good, in communities where you have good youth leagues, it usually filters into a good high school program. And a high school program, of course, those are key years in development. 40% of kids that play Little League go on to play. So Little League is an opportunity for a lot of kids to play, whether, you know, they may play because their brother does or their dad wants them to play. They introduce them to the game. And because it is a challenging game,
mm-hmm.
It makes it, it kind of, the game will dictate who goes on. And there is nothing more common than talented failures in baseball. And it's, the key is willpower and determination.
Mm.
Who is willing to work? So if you've got a wishbone instead of a backbone, baseball is not really a good game for you.
Yeah.
Because it requires a lot of work. And if you want to be good at it, you have to put in the time. And I've told kids, I said, you know, the one thing about kids today, they have so much in their life. I mean, the computers and I see them spread out so much with this lesson and that lesson and this lesson and exposing them to so many things.
Mm-hmm.
Baseball seems to be, we show up for practice and we show up for games and everybody hits. And I always thought that that kind of takes away some of the desire for kids to get better. When I was playing and it was like, this is the starting nine. And if you're not good enough to make the starting nine, then you sit on the bench until, you know, the message is get better and you'll play, which is an intrinsic motivation that I think we need. When things are given to people and rewards are given to people or trophies are given to young kids and everyone gets a participation trophy, it doesn't quite mean as much.
Boy, did you hit it on the butt? Wow.
So I think that that has a direct influence on the ability to get better. So with the diverse life that kids grow up in today and being inside with a computer and not getting outside. And I threw a lot of things long before I played baseball, rock fights, newspapers, water balloons, everything. I mean, we threw things today.
Mm-hmm.
Kids are inside and they're very adroit with their computers and their cell phones. But, I think a lot of skills are developed by running and playing and using your body. I tell kids all the time, you come into Little League and they teach you the rules of the game. Okay, you throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball, you run. And they don't teach you, you got to use your body to play this game. So a lot has to do with the body you have. If you're in a car race, the kind of car you're in is going to determine your success in that race. Well, some people are gifted with bodies where they're very fast. They can throw. They can do a lot of things. But all of that still has to be, developed.
Sure.
And the only way to develop that is to go out and play.
Well,
there's
no
substitute.
The other thing you've I feel like you're one of the better pitching guys in the country. I remember being with you and we were on the mound one day and you're showing me a drill where you had a string that was, you know, was attached to that release point all the way to home plate to kind of show the pitcher, you know, where the ball's going and so forth. What, get into pitching a little bit. What, because you pitched in, you know, pro ball all the way to AAA and spent 10 years doing that just in professional baseball. And then you became a pitching coach also. Give our audience an idea. Where, for young kids, what's your philosophy, you know, about pitching all year round or throwing all year round? You know, you've seen a lot more injuries than we used to see when we were young. What are you seeing out there?
Well, ironically, you have pitchers in the major leagues that are held to a pitch count.
Right.
And I've seen more guys taken out of games with no hitters because they hit that magical 100 pitch mark.
Right.
And the irony is they limit pitches in the big leagues and they don't throw enough when they're young.
Mm.
So I think that it's the throwing is like any other thing that you do. If you don't do it enough, I don't care if it's a golf swing, I remember watching one of John Wooden's practices. And he would blow a whistle, and they'd go to the free throw line. Then they'd go in the half-court game, blow a whistle, go to the free throw line. Blow a whistle, full court game. Blow a whistle, condition, go to the free throw line. And I asked him, how come you did that throughout the game? And he goes, well, fatigue is a factor, and I want them to be able to perform when they're tired, because those points count just as much in the fourth quarter, and I want people to be able to overcome fatigue. Baseball is the game where you've got to go out and take a lot of ground balls to be good at catching ground balls. You mentioned the string, and I use the string quite a bit to let the pitcher know different angles, standing on the third base side of the rubber versus the middle of the rubber. And, how, if you go into a batting cage, you don't have angles. The ball is thrown right at you. And, those balls have a lot easier percentage of hitting them. So, the game kind of lets you know, if you want to know how to pitch, listen to a hitting coach, because the first thing he'll say is get a good pitch to hit, you know? And so as a pitcher, you find out, I'm not going to give you what you want. And, there's basically four elements. There's the mental, which you're going to spend your rest of your life. I don't care if you play 20 years in the big leagues. There's guys that still learn in the baseball game. There is the physical, which is what you do with your body in terms of conditioning, keeping your legs strong, throwing, and training your body to play baseball, not train your body to lift weights. There's a difference. You can be strong, but not be a very adroit baseball player if you're training. For instance, Brett Favre, when he was a quarterback with the Packers, didn't have the same conditioning that the middle linebackers did because of the nature of those positions. The wide receivers didn't have the same type of bulking up that the interior line did. So I think that baseball misses the boat a little bit with the dollar sign on the muscle, thinking if we build big muscles, that's going to equate to velocity and power. And I think nothing is better than, I'd rather see someone swing the bat 200 times every day and throw. And that, I think that's one reason why you have the pitching problems you have, because either mechanical, and that's the third part of the wheel, the mechanical part. So you have nutrition, the physical part, what you do with your body in terms of condition, the mechanical part, and those are all factors that play into it.
Yeah, and there's, and you mentioned it, there's a lot of kids out there, especially nowadays, you know, they're all, everything's so organized. None of these kids are going out and playing on their own. They're not throwing against the wall. They're not working on their own. They're not, you know, sometimes they're not even having fun because it's so organized that it's almost like, you know, a job to some of these kids. And then we wonder why some of them quit.
And the fourth part of that, I mentioned four parts, is nutritional. It's very important what you eat. People kind of blow that off. But even when I played, I remember the spread, where the clubby would go in between batting practice, was all fat, salt, and sugar, you know, it's really important. You, Indy 500 cars, they have a formula for gas. They pay a lot of money to get that formula right, and the viscosity of the oil and everything that goes into the engine. Well, our bodies are a lot more complex than what goes into a Formula 500 engine by far.
Sure.
And, I mean, your car may have a brain, but it doesn't have a mind like we do, you know, so it's really important. And, probably one of the least talked about, nutrition. I mean, I see kids pound down a hot dog and a hamburger and go play and think they're going to have energy. And, it's just a lack of people know more about their bikes and their cars than they do their bodies.
Yeah.
So I think that the nutritional, the mental, the physical, and the mechanical are the four parts that have to be addressed as an athlete, and especially a pitcher. And it's like a car. Which wheel can you do without in a car? You can certainly drive it, but not as efficiently.
Yeah, now you mentioned throwing. When you talk about throwing, kids ought to be playing catch all year round, but pitching should be limited to a point?
Well, I think that pitching on the mound, especially, the human body is not designed to be on uneven ground. So I've always liked to do a lot of maintenance on flat ground. As far as youth, I think it's important that kids go out and throw and maybe even play different sports. I think they can get so many kids can get burnt out on the sport.
Sure.
You know, because they're playing all year round and they're on a club team and a travel team, and by the time they get to high school, they're saying, I'm burnt out. I just don't want to do it anymore. So I think that playing other sports is good too. I couldn't imagine myself, if I hadn't played football. Football really taught me how to get in shape, because Little League baseball was take a lap, grab your glove, and go play. And if right. you happened to hit the ball, you'd run to first base. I mean, my first Pop Warner football practice, I had never run that far unless somebody was chasing me, you know. So they're the different sports, even basketball, you know, where you're running, using your legs, and developing athletic ability. I said all of that is something that I think that kids replace for intrinsic stuff like, you know, the computers and their cell phones.
Sure. Now, we've got a lot of, you know, folks, we got coaches, players, and parents all over the world listening to the podcast. We're very fortunate to have a great audience supporting us. You know, if you were to talk to some of the coaches and some of the kids also, and then talk about, you know, the mechanical aspect of pitching, what would be some of the things that are extremely important for them to focus on when you're working on a mechanics?
Well, everything from how you hold the baseball, understanding what part of your body does what job, because you mentioned the arm quite a bit, strong arm, and just that terminology suggests, well, if I go out and do a lot of push-ups and lift weights and get my arm real strong, that'll convert to throwing the baseball fast. But it's actually a fast arm. It's your hip rotation, your balance is very critical. It's a high elbow throwing activity.
Mm-hmm.
And mechanics are probably the lifesaver in pitchers. So when someone asks about a pitch count or a certain pitch, we don't let them throw curveballs in Little League. Well, no one pitch is going to hurt your arm any more than another pitch when it's thrown mechanically correct.
Mm-hmm.
Kids hurt their arms throwing fastballs incorrect by overthrowing. And basically, I mean, it's difficult in a segment to break down mechanics, but you want to keep the ball. The further you get away from your head with the ball, the more stress it is on your arm.
Good point.
How you hold the ball is very critical, because when kids squeeze the ball, and I remember I used to squeeze the bat to think if I was going to hit it hard, I had to squeeze it hard. And it's just the opposite. The game is played with relaxed concentration. So when we start to think in terms of pitching mechanics, and we hear that so much, I used to study. I'd get a pair of binoculars, and every chance I'd get to see a major league player, I would just sit there and study them. I remember going to Dodger Stadium and having binoculars on Willie Mays and watching him hit. And I was saying, wow, he's got a hitch. He's moving his hands. My coach in Little League told me to keep my hands still. And
right.
Of course, as soon as I started moving my hands, I was going, wow, that really works. And, you know, you guy says, well, look at a boxer. You don't see a boxer standing there like a statue. He's moving his feet, his hands, and there's a rhythm there.
Sure.
Pitching mechanics and our throwing mechanics in general are really important. I tell kids all the time, I said, you know, when you warm up, say, a team, I used to like to have my catchers throw with my catchers, my pitchers throw with my pitchers. I always thought the pitching staff was a team within a team and trained differently. And I would tell outfielders, until you throw 10 of your longest throws, you're not warm yet. I go out to see a Little League practice, and they're 25 feet apart lobbing the ball to each other.
Yeah.
I saw a friend ask me to come and help him with his all-star team, and there was a bunch of kids that couldn't play catch. You know, and you're thinking, well, this is one thing that is a, you know, it's a sign of the times. Kids don't go out and throw other things. Like, we didn't have all the technology they do. So we went out and threw a lot of balls, you know, all the time throwing something. And that develops a skill. So when you are at the point after Little League, say 12 through 15, that's a critical age. because a lot of the kids, it's kind of on their own, and they played Little League, and then and then 15 to 18 is usually in high school, unless you're in the Midwest, where high school is too difficult because of weather. American Legion is a big thing.
Sure.
But throw a lot, play catch, and use your body and swing the bat. You get good at playing the game by playing the game.
Yeah. And, I was going to mention, you could tell by when you look at Dominican players or Latin players, they play a lot. They play on their own. They do their own thing down there. That's all they're doing all the time. And the athleticism shows it.
Well, absolutely. Down there, they give him a bat, ball, and a glove when they come into the world, and the baseball doesn't work out, they could be an engineer. So it's a way of life there.
Right.
And that used to be what it is here. So once again, when you have so much diversity, it's a lot easier to throw a soccer ball out in the field with youth and let them run around, and that's good for their legs. We have the scare now with the head injuries in football, where a lot of parents are thinking twice about letting their kids play Pop Warner football.
Mm-hmm.
With good reason, you know. And I think that's going to help baseball, because more kids will play baseball. You're having a lot of, division in the United States in terms of, there was a lot of great athletes that played in the inner city. Baseball has been trying to revise that for a long time.
Yep.
And, kids, if a sport like basketball, Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson and all that, those guys did a great job promoting basketball. A lot of kids want to play basketball. You go to the NFL and see where they did a great job promoting football, and still do. And a lot of kids wanted to play football. And especially in high school baseball, the crowd consisted of your girlfriend and your parents, maybe, and that was about it. In football, the stands were loaded, the cheerleaders, it was a big deal, and it was exciting, and I would have hated to miss that experience. But baseball was something that I loved, and I would put it away for a little bit, play another sport, and then come back to it and throw. And I never stopped throwing something.
Yeah.
No,
and you mentioned, and you hit it on the button. Kids just don't throw enough. Now
They don't throw enough when they're young, and they prevent them from throwing too much when they're in the big leagues. We have a pitch count. We're going to keep them down to a pitch count. And I guess Sparky Anderson was the first one that started taking people out early. And I remember talking to Gary Adams when he was a coach at UCLA, and he said, "What do you think the cutoff point is for a pitcher?" And I said, "I know where you're going now. Somehow someone came up with this 100 pitch formula.
Right.
One pitch mechanically incorrect is too much." So,
yeah, and there's countries, like the Japanese, they overthrow, obviously, but they're incredibly, in good shape in the right areas. And they throw all the time before they actually pitch, and they can, they don't worry about pitch counts. Now, they probably should be worrying about it, because they're the complete opposite, but they don't worry as much as we do about it, especially at the major league level.
I was very impressed with their work ethic. I remember going over with you when we were in Japan, and I said, "Pete, come here, look at this."
Yeah.
They're bowing to the field.
Yep.
And when we were in Australia, staying at the Rudy Hill Resort, where all the team stayed, I was always curious. I went over to the Cuban team after we played them, and I talked to Linares, their third baseman, and I said, "You guys did something today I've never seen before.
Hmm.
You took infield with one ball. I've never seen that before."
Wow.
Because when I hit infield, I got two in each pocket. My first baseman's got a couple. I could put a couple of pitchers in the outfield for overthrows. And, I said, "You guys took infield with one ball." And he said, "Over in Cuba, if we throw the ball away or we miss balls, they take us off the field, put us in a truck, and we work in the sugarcane field for 2 weeks. When we come back, we don't miss balls or throw them away."
That's an incentive.
That's a little drastic, and we couldn't do that here. But take away their cell phone, that might be the equivalent. But it really is something that is impressed upon. So summer baseball, for instance, a lot of kids want a place to play in the summer, and they do a lot of pitching, but the conditioning's not there. That's the part that's lacking more than anything in summer baseball. And I never punished anybody by running them. I always told them running was a commitment to playing, because if you're born strong in your legs, but we run to create stamina. So strength without stamina, you're not in shape. Stamina without strength, you're not in shape. That's the key to conditioning. And so when we start to lose stamina, then that slows everything down. That takes away your ability to play at your top level. That's where I think the steroids came in, because especially in some of these countries, that the way out is to sign a baseball contract, and you're getting kids over there taking, you know, steroids. And I don't know, when I was 12 years old and loved baseball so much, if someone told me I could take a pill and hit 30 home runs in Little League instead of 10, I'd have probably taken it, you know. But
I'm sure we're not recommending that.
No, I'm not recommending it at all, but that is part of our society where we want to take a pill.
Yep,
to do instead of
fast.
Going to the gym.
Yeah,
instead of going to the gym.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, Kenny, no quick fixes.
This is important, and you hit on some great aspects. I agree so much. We want everything so fast. We got about 10 minutes left, but I want to also, because you've got a tremendous amount of experience in managing and coaches, and we've got coaches all over the world, especially at the grassroots level. Give our coaches around the world some advice about coaching, you know, how you see it. You know, maybe some of the things that when you go to the park that you're seeing that, you know, aren't quite being done well and could be done better. Let's put it that way.
Well, first of all, your coaches are your backbone in youth sports. So, you know, hats off to everybody that puts in the time to coach. You and I both know how time consuming it is.
Absolutely.
And especially in youth sports, create games. I went out and was helping someone with the Little League, and I said, you actually do your coaching in practice. I had a thing. The practices belong to me. The games belong to the kids. So I didn't sit there and call every pitch. I want to let them make their mistakes. I knew in Little League, if I threw a ball down the middle of the plate and the guy hit it over the scoreboard, I better not throw it there again. I figured that out.
Yep.
But it develops instincts. So do your coaching during practice. Create a drill that is part of a game. When you condition on the bases. Do the running on the bases so they get used to running the bases. Because more games are lost by bad base running than won by home runs. And so when you have your practices, instead of just standing up taking batting practice, I always thought that was an individual thing. Go in the cage and work on your individual swing. But when we do team hitting, put people on the bases, create counts, let your pitchers and your hitters work together. I used to have a thing where I would put four people up, then take the other eight people and fill in on defense and let them rotate in groups, and always put a catcher and a pitcher with each group and let them actually compete and play games, because nothing takes the place of playing in the game. So the other skills, the throwing and everything, team throwing, do your conditioning on the bases and don't lack the conditioning. The kids today, I think they're dying to learn something, and a lot of coaches are too. So they're putting in their time. I'd say let the games belong to the players. Write down the things they're not doing well. Then that gives you something to work on in practice. And that's when the coaches, that's their time. I'm going to be the coach during practice. The games are going to belong to you. The practices are going to belong to me. And when you practice well, then that's going to convert into games. And it also makes the games more fun for the kids. Because when you do all the thinking for them, I've heard coaches, I called a good game today. Well, when you call every pitch, what kind of development does the kid have to develop instincts? Because that makes the game a lot more fun.
Amen.
When the catcher puts down his fingers and the pitcher shakes him off, I mean, that's the catcher and pitcher. I used to want them to talk to each other. That's the one thing that, and more in our society, kids are communicating less. Their communication skills are almost maladroit because of the cell phone media that they're used to. So on the baseball field, you know, I introduced them to a game called Workup, where everybody – started out, and I recommend this highly when you first start a season with kids, and they have to play positions. You play workup where you have four guys at the plate, and each kid gets two outs. When you get two outs, you rotate. So you go from right field to center to left to short to third to second to first to pitch to up. Now, if you catch a ball on a fly, you trade places with the hitter. So now instead of being afraid of the ball being hit to them and going, oh, God, I hope it's not hit to me, it's a fly ball. Now the fly ball is a piece of cheese. I want to get there and I want to catch it because if I do, I'm rewarded. I get to go up and hit. So it makes it fun. It's a game they can play, and they'll figure it out. So I say the big thing is not to let the kids lose interest in the game. Give them the game. It's their game. Give it to them. It's your game during practice. That's when you use your knowledge. That's where you create your drills. That's where you can make mistakes. That's where you can be amplified. You can elevate. And they don't have their parents and friends there that get embarrassed during the game if coach is yelling at them because they make a mistake during the game. It's counterproductive, and I think a lot of kids, especially today, are a lot more sensitive to any kind of, you know, criticism. So it's a lot easier to do it in practice amongst the team and bring the team together like that. And then in the game, say, it's your game. It's just, you know, it happens in school. You do your studying aloud. The tests are keep your eyes on your own paper. Take the test. So the games are the test, and the practices are preparing for the test. Now, how do you get good in school on a test? By preparing. So it's still the formula. Success is when preparation meets opportunity.
Outstanding. Let me tell you something. Talk about an ending to a show. That was a grand slam. We're getting a ton of great feedback on Facebook. Aaron Capista, former national team player for me in the 14-year-old Pan Am Games. We got a bunch of people just high-fiving. That was outstanding. I'm going to have to take just that part alone and play that over and over and over in all our social media. Kenny, one more thing before I let you go. I know, you know, I wish the audience could hear you for 5 hours because you've got a lot of great insights. Now, I got to end with this because something different. I noticed you were also in Bad News Bears in 2005. I got to know how was that for you to be playing in that part, in that movie?
Well, I've always thought Little League was the most romantic stage in baseball. I loved Little League, and those games were just as important as any professional game I ever played in. So there's a special magic about Little League, and it was fun working with Billy Bob Thornton. I first saw him in Sling Blade, and he is a huge St. Louis Cardinal fan, really nice man. It was a good experience working on that. I remember seeing the original Bad News Bears, and as much as Walter Matthau was a character that people looked at, and he had his beer and, you know, the whole thing, he did exactly what I was saying. He let them play the game. He let them have it.
Yeah.
I don't remember in Little League a coach ever calling a pitch.
Right.
He made out the lineup and said, go play. That was it. Yeah. You know, so give the game back to the kids. And at that especially at that level, kids fall in love with the game. They follow their heart. Whatever they fall in love with, that's going to be their intrinsic motivation. And if you have that, they're going to be able to guide themselves. It's the old saying, if you manage yourself, no one else has to manage you.
Fantastic. Hey, listen, Kenny, got to thank you. Thanks for joining us on Baseball Outside the Box. This was a tremendous, tremendous show, and hope to see you here soon.
Well, we're going to see each other soon anyway because of the thing that Hero's doing, and I wish I could go and see you guys in Hawaii, but I've got a lot of balls in the air here. And but we will catch up and say hi to your great wife, Beverly. She's, you know, you lucked out. You hit the girl lottery on that one, my friend.
Yeah, that, you know what? You're right. Thanks for saying that, by the way, because I think you're 100% right on that one. I don't know how I did that one.
Well, that was God's answers are smarter than our prayers sometimes, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Thanks, Kenny.
All right, buddy. Take care.
All right, man. Talk to you. Listen, that was Ken Medlock, a very good friend, one of the best pitching coaches I've been around. Also, an actor he's been in over 45 sitcoms and shows. You know, I mean, a lot of famous ones, but we talked about Moneyball, the main one. And also, he managed an independent ball, pitching coach independent ball. He was the Team USA pitching coach in 1999, the year before the Olympics. I was fortunate enough to be with Ken on that. So, again, special thanks to Ken Medlock. I want to thank Brian Kroc, our producer on the other side of the glass. Thank you to the Lineup Media Group. Thank you to our audience. You guys are fantastic. Thanks to all our Facebook watchers there. I know you enjoyed the show. And don't forget, help us out. We're all over social media at Baseball Out, also on Facebook. And we're at Baseball Outside the Box is our website. Share the show with people. Let them know about it. Help us out. We are thrilled that you joined us. Again, remember, coaches education is the key to the fundamentals of the game. We've got to continue to educate coaches, players, and parents. It's not all about just coaches. It's about the group, all three of them. If we can educate all three, it will help baseball tremendously. And one thing, it will help the grassroots. It'll help the kids that are playing the game. They're going to have a lot more fun. You heard from Ken what kids ought to be doing, coaches. Let's not always stay with what we did in the past. Let's learn, adjust, make things different, make it fun for the kids so that way they learn faster and at the same time have a little bit more fun playing the game. God bless everybody. We want to see you on Baseball Outside the Box on our next show. I'm Pete Caliendo, and we'll see you soon. See you later.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.